Welcome to this edition of the Neon Jazz interview series with Carol Bash, the producer of the PBS documentary on Mary Lou Williams called The Lady Who Swings the Band. She will be in Kansas City on March 21st, 2015 to premiere the documentary film. During our recent conversation, she talked about what led her to make this film, what she learned about Kansas City, how good it was to work with the Mutual Musicians Foundation, along with much, much more. Please dig it, my friends.
First of all, thank you very much for taking a little time to speak with the Journey on Jazz. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And then I'm going to go ahead and just dive right in here and ask you, before we get into Mary Lou Williams, The Lady Who Swings the Band, I want to get a little bit of a background on you, just how you got into film, how you kind of accumulated a love of jazz.
Sure. My background is in journalism, actually. I started in news. I started at CBS News, actually, at 60 Minutes as, I guess you could say, the receptionist. And then moved, and this is in the... I'm going to age myself, so we're talking about the mid-90s and early 90s. And then what happened is that I was at CBS for, I think like 5 or 6 years before I realized that I wanted to tell my own stories, tell stories about my culture, African-American culture, just not tell a news cycle type of story, something more in depth, and then decided to go back and get my master's and study film, in which I did in a school in the New York City area where I'm from, called the New School. Got my master's, and then came out and started my new career as an independent filmmaker. And so what that meant was that I basically, up until, and I still am doing this, just working alongside other filmmakers and helping them and tell their stories and also getting the kind of experience that I needed to be able to create my own documentary film, which was On Mary Lou. And this is actually my first feature film that I've completed. So, so that's the short of the long.
Right on. So you kind of had a little bit of a rebirth getting into a new career and doing what you want to do.
Exactly.
Right on. So obviously we're speaking about a titan in the world of jazz here. Tell me what brought you into this project. What's kind of your interest in jazz?
Well, my interest in jazz starts, from childhood. My father, my parents are music lovers, but my father definitely, had the Billie Holidays, had the, they kind of like cabaret too, so Bobby Short they liked. So I was exposed to jazz very early on. And then what happened, I would say, more particularly with Mary Lou Williams, although they did not listen to Mary Lou. They weren't Mary Lou Williams's, they weren't fans of Mary Lou, or let me just say that they didn't have any of her albums.
Right.
What happened is that basically I'm married, and once I, my father-in-law and my mother-in-law are also jazz lovers. And my father-in-law was a fan of Mary Lou Williams. And so he was playing her music one day, and I walked into their house, and I just heard this playing, and I was just spellbound by it. And he said, that's Mary Lou Williams, one of the greats. And this is like around 10, 11 years ago. And I had never heard of her, and I was wondering why he described her as one of the greats, and yet, I'd never heard of her name, and started to do a little digging about her life, because by then a book had come out about her by Linda Dahl. And after reading that book, I said, well, I have to do a documentary project on this woman. And I was just captivated just just how unconventional her story was, and yet, you know, had not been brought into the forefront of jazz. So that was the beginning of the journey.
So from the inception of hearing that music and then coming to the point where you're standing in front of the poster at a premiere, talk to me a little bit about the in-between, like what the process was like getting through the archives and interviews and all of this. What was it like to accumulate the story of Mary Lou?
Yes. Wow. And it has been a journey, Joe. you know, so I'll try to encapsulate 11 years down to a sound bite or two. But it's been a pleasure being on this ride, and it's still going on. But it starts really number one with her music. It starts really just listening to her music and really just getting just more acquainted with her sound. Luckily, her whole collection, she saved everything. And by the way, I had never, by the time I decided to do this project, Mary Lou had already passed on. So she was already, you know, with our ancestors. But, she basically saved everything, and she has a massive collection of her artifacts, of her music, of pictures at the Institute of Jazz Studies in Newark, New Jersey. Wow. And so luckily I'm near there, and so I basically, you know, lived at the Institute throughout this whole project. They're like my second, the people there are like, you know, relatives at this point. You know, the first thing also was to clear to get permission from the person who was in charge of her foundation, and that was Father Peter O'Brien, or still is, you know, and sort of get his blessing, if you will, excuse the pun, to sort of tell her story, in which he generously let me do. So it was getting all those ducks in a row, immersing myself in the archives, and then just sort of working with, I would say, on my filmmaking side, was also working with an experienced veteran mentor filmmaker who is also my executive producer, Stanley Nelson, and getting his guidance. And getting a crew together, getting interviews with musicians and scholars and people who knew her relatives, just sort of going along that process of just creating the story on film. And then, of course, at the end, we have the elements, and then it's just crafting it in the edit room with a phenomenal editor, who I have named Sandra Christie. So it's the one thing I will say is that when it came to talking to people and asking whether they would be interviewed on camera, it was never, ever an issue. I mean, people in jazz know Mary Lou Williams, and so the respect that they have for her was just, you know, allowed me to bring phenomenal talent, you know, to this project. So that's just been another part of the pleasure and the honor that I've had to sort of be immersed in the jazz world, if you will.
So it's probably safe to say that in this country, maybe even the world, you might know the most about her because of all of the research that you've done. So let me ask you this. Of everything that we as the public know, what is it as somebody that's really done research on her? What were the most interesting things to you about her?
I would say the interesting thing about her, one interesting thing about her is how she saw herself. She knew very early on that she was unique, you know, that she had a gift. And I think the thing that really inspires me and kept me going, and as a woman, and as a Black woman, is that she never saw any of that as a deterrent. She knew she was a genius, and she had the talent, and nothing was going to stop her from fulfilling what she saw as her mission in music. So she just kept plowing forward, and because of that, I think really attracted, you know, the other icons to her, you know, of jazz to her, because they saw her talent, and nobody, it wasn't really, as far as the musicians were concerned, it wasn't a matter of race or gender. You know, that was an issue maybe with other people, but not certainly within the music world.
Yeah.
And let me see, what's another interesting thing about her was this, I mean, I think just how she, it was just very important, just how she just saw her mission again, also, in a sense, was to keep being innovative. I mean, I think, you know, once you'll see the film, but once you hear her music, it's really quite spellbounding to understand that, you know, Mary Lou Williams' music of the 30s is not Mary Lou, you know, not her music of the 50s, and it's not her music of the 70s. She really kept evolving and infusing the different sounds from that era into her music. So she just kept growing as an artist in a way that's pretty phenomenal.
Absolutely. There is a story, sometimes you got to dispel myths and find out on kind of a Snopes mission here, some things. At the Harlem's Rhythm Club, when she was a teenager, it says that Louis Armstrong went in, stopped and listened to her play, and picked her up and kissed her after she was done. Did that happen?
Yes, it did. Actually, it was Fats Waller.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, she listened to Louis Armstrong, too. I mean, she sat in very early on, her husband, and they were in a band in the 20s. They went to New York, and at that point, the New York jazz scene was really at the beginning. So she sat in with Louis Armstrong, with his band, which is pretty amazing. But a friend brought her to a rehearsal, and where Fats Waller was doing some play, you know, the music to some play. And he was playing some tunes for the chorus girls, whatever. And then his friend went up to him and said, "You see that little girl over there?" And at this point, Mary Lou was like, what, 14? "You see that little girl? Whatever you just played, she can play it right back to you." And she did. She got up there, and she, whatever Lou, you know, Fats Waller had transcribed, she did it. And he just, like, picked her up and said, "Wow,
that's
we're
awesome.
Like-minded." That's awesome. That's awesome. She talks about how he was always so generous with her once she came to New York, and, you know, up until his death, they were just kindred spirits. But, yeah.
Wonderful.
Pretty phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is. You know, I just saw that documentary with Clark Terry and Justin Coughlin, Keep On Keeping On. And at one point, Quincy Jones said, all a young musician needs is someone to believe in them. And at that point in her life, that may have been a huge crossroads for her, to be at a point where she got the confidence to say, "I can do this. I can do it live," you know, and on the world stage, so to speak. So.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, you know, she certainly knew Fats Waller and his genius. So, wow.
Yeah.
What does that say?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of jazz genius on the keys, how would you rank her in the annals of jazz history as far as, like, I don't know, a quantitative rank or a number rank? Where do you think she lies?
Yikes. You know, I really, I just don't like doing that, you know, because I think it's like everyone is so unique and brings their own talent. It's like, it's almost like apples and oranges in a way. You have to just, I feel like if you do that, you're taking away from some other artist's gift.
Sure.
But, you know, she's up there. You know, I mean, she deserves to be just as up there as Duke Ellington, you know, or Count Basie, or, you know, or Fats Waller. You know, I mean, I think she's on that pantheon of greats. And so that's how I see her.
Yeah. So when you look at all of these greats and legends and these luminaries that have passed through the jazz orbit, and they all, the great ones always have something they brought to it. They did something specifically for jazz, whether it was a movement or a sound or a flair or that Miles Davis thing. What did Mary Lou do? How can you boil her life down as far as a jazz musician? What did she do for jazz?
She had a sound. And it might not be as distinctive as, like, a Thelonious Monk, where, you know, you can kind of, once he plays, you kind of, oh, that's a monk kind of tune. But she had sort of, like, a sound that, it's sort of like a lilt in a way. I think what she did, though, is that she took her sound and she infused it throughout the various mediums of music. So it was, you know, whether it was for a symphony, whether it was for a big band, whether it was for a combo, or whether she was playing solo, there's sort of a distilledness to her playing that she brought, and again with the innovation that she grabbed from different styles and infused that into her music, you know, it was just a unique kind of innovative thrust, I guess you could say.
Sure.
You know, I guess it's hard to sort of boil her down to what she did for jazz. I mean, she, you know, as far as what she did for just her as an artist, what she did for women in jazz, she brought just her incredible gift and let people know that, you know, you can't really stop genius no matter what package it's in. It's going to express itself.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's really just, you know, that's her presence is what has, her presence has done so much for jazz.
Absolutely. So her biographical orbit kind of went from Atlanta to Pennsylvania and around, but she had some quality time with Andy Kirk in Kansas City and has a jazz legacy in Kansas City. What did you learn about this jazz town, Kansas City, during your documentary?
Well, the first thing I learned is that I wish I was there. Because she looked at Kansas City as really the high point of her career as a musician. She looked upon it as this being the city where she learned her art, the art form, and just her honing her skill as a jazz pianist. I mean, you know, she talks about just Kansas City being so active and musically infused and fun. I mean, she was young, you know, she was in her 20s, so she was just having a ball, you know, and it was just a balling kind of town. And it was just so much, you know, it wasn't just blue. It wasn't just jazz. It was blues. It was country. It was bluegrass. I mean, all that stuff was in Kansas City, and it was just such a hotbed for creativity. You know, so it just sounds like it was just a blast.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Good food.
Yeah.
And entertainment. You know, and just, all that
absolutely.
Stuff.
Speaking of all of that, you're going to be able to come here for the premiere. How do you feel about coming to Kansas City for the premiere on March 21?
I am absolutely thrilled, and I'm so honored that Anita Dixon of the Mutual Musicians Foundation has invited me to Kansas City to screen the film for for the public, I believe, or definitely for constituents of the foundation. And you know, this is really home. This is Mary Lou's musical home, and what more fitting place is there to be but to show the film on Mary Lou Williams in Kansas City?
Yeah,
I mean, there's a street named after her, you know, in Kansas City. So definitely, I'm just looking so forward to it and just honored, and I can't wait. I hope people come out and see the film and listen to her music more.
Right on. Right on. What was it like to work with Anita and the Mutual Musicians Foundation?
You know, the fun thing about the music, the foundation is that they also have an incredible archive of photographs of Kansas City jazz musicians. And so part of my research was, of course, getting photos of, you know, Mary Lou and other musicians, and to sort of fill out that Kansas City part of the film. And so, you know, Anita, you know, and so that's how I came in contact with Anita, and her mission to really galvanize Kansas City around these musicians and to really, you know, elevate the foundation, you know, to a much wider audience, a worldwide audience. It's just, you know, it's just incredible and inspiring. And so I think in a way we're kind of like sisters, are kind of like-minded. You know, we have missions to sort of elevate the art, elevate the craft, elevate the artist, whether if Ramiz is one artist, Mary Lou, or her with many artists. But it's just, you know, she's just a force of nature.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Kansas City is much better off with Anita and the foundation doing what they're doing, for sure. For sure. Now that you have, so to speak, jazz on the brain, are there any other projects, any other musicians in the jazz world that you're kind of eyeballing as potentials to continue pathing your documentary lineage in your career?
You know what? I do, actually. I'm not going to go right into another jazz or music documentary. You know, I kind of need to sort of go somewhere else. But I already do have another unconventional African-American jazz artist that I would love to do down the line. And I'm going to leave it at that. I have not approached anyone, you know, who would give me the rights and the permission. But, I'm not done with my jazz story yet.
Right on. Very cool. Well, we're going to look forward to seeing it. Carol, thank you for your time. Have a great time in Kansas City. Thanks for making the film. You know, we love the jazz and we love the Kansas City.
Great, and I look forward to being there.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to yet another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players and advocates of jazz in America. And thanks to Carol for digging that jazz and this wonderful new documentary. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino on the iTunes Store, or you can always visit theneonjazz.blogspot.com for all things Neon Jazz. Until next time, enjoy the music, my friends.
Neon Jazz.